Good morning. It's nice to see you all. I'm Reverend Marjorie. It's my pleasure to welcome you to First Parish of Sudbury. Each of you are welcome here, whether you are a longtime member or if you just found your way here this morning. Each are welcome to safely bring your whole self into this meeting house where we hold many beliefs but gather as one. I know I missed the choral opening. Deborah's going to smack me. For those of you who were not here last week, I welcome Michelle Barkhauer. Michelle is our interim director of religious education and will be with our children and youth as we search for a permanent replacement. Thank you for being with us. For the next hour, this meeting house is our sanctuary where all are invited to turn off your phones and to just be. And with that, I'm going to invite the choir to do what they should have done before me. Thank you. This morning's reading is by Sarah Stewart. Bring who you are as you enter our meeting house this morning. Bring your best self and your struggling self. Bring your mistakes and your triumphs. Bring your shortcomings and your recommitment to good. Bring yourself here. Open your heart to beauty, to truth, to the door that is open to something greater than oneself. Here in this church, we are trying to walk together on a peaceable way, trying to hammer out division and hatred and all that separates one from another. We try and we fall short, but held in love, we try again. We come together this morning as a congregation to wonder and imagine, to raise our voices in song, to remember our promises and vow to live by them once again. You ready? Please join us in saying this morning's unison chalice lighting, located in your order of worship. Blessed is the match consumed in kindling flame. Blessed is the flame that burns in the heart's secret places. Blessed is the heart with strength to stop its beating for honor's sake. Blessed is the match consumed in kindling flame. Please rise in body and our spirit to sing our first hymn, We Begin Again in Love. For remaining silent when a single voice would have made a difference. For each time that our fears have made us rigid and inaccessible.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For each time we have struck out in anger without just cause. For each time that our greed has blinded us to the needs of others. For the selfishness that sets us apart and alone.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For falling short of the admonitions of the Spirit.
We forgive ourselves and each other.
For losing sight of our unity.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again in love.
For those and for so many acts, both evident and subtle, which have fueled the illusion of separateness.
We forgive ourselves and each other. We begin again.
Hi, how's everybody doing? So, as most of you know, I have never done a story for all ages before. And since this week is the last week of our beauty theme in this month, I decided to adapt the gift of the Magi. And so that's the story that we're going to be telling today, only I've asked a couple of my friends to come with me to help me tell this story. There once lived a husband and a wife in a small home in a small town. And though they were very poor and they didn't have much, they were very happy. The man's wife, she's in here somewhere, hold on. The man's wife had long, lovely rainbow hair that fell in cascades down her back. And every night after dinner, she would sit and she would brush her long, lovely, beautiful rainbow hair. And her husband would watch her do this. And her husband was mesmerized at how beautiful she was. And every night he would think to himself, she has never looked more beautiful than she does in this moment. One night, as she was brushing out her long, beautiful rainbow hair, she went to place a hair clip in it, and it broke and fell apart in her hands. And she asked her husband, "Dear husband, my hair clip is broken. When you go into town tomorrow, would you be so kind as to buy me a new one?" Now, the husband didn't have a lot of money, and his face became very sad. Let me see if I can do sad face with a mustache. Okay. "Dear wife," he says, and this thing keeps coming up, I'm sorry. "Dear wife," and he takes a watch from his pocket. It's his most prized possession, and he says, "I don't even have enough money to fix the watch band that is broken on my favorite watch. Please forgive me. I cannot get you a hair clip." And so the wife, with her lovely long rainbow hair, says, "Dear husband, that's all right. I don't need a hair clip." And she takes her hair and dramatically pushes it back behind her shoulders, and they happily go to sleep. Now, the next day, as the husband is walking through town, he sees an old sign for a shop, and the shop says that they buy old and used goods. And he thinks to himself, "That's it. I will sell my watch, and I will take the small sum of money, and I will buy my wife the hair clip that she has so desperately wanted." And so this is what he does. Now, when he gets home that evening, he's very surprised to find his wife with very, very short hair. She's cut all of her hair off. It's gone. All of the long, lovely rainbow hair has disappeared. And she's so excited, and she says, "Husband." And she takes a box from her pocket, and she gives it to him, and she says, "Please open it. Please, please open it." So he does. And inside, he finds a watch band. And he begins to laugh. And he says, "Wife," and he takes the box out of his pocket and he holds it next to the watch band. And he says, I sold my watch today to buy you the hair clip. And the wife says, but husband, I sold my hair to buy you the watch band. And in that moment, they just couldn't help it. They just laughed and laughed and laughed, not because what they did was necessarily funny, but because of the amazing wealth of love that they shared between them that allowed them to do this. And in that moment, as the husband was looking at his wife with her very short hair, he realized that her beauty didn't come from the way that she looked, and it wasn't anything that you could see in the mirror. It was a light that shone from somewhere much deeper inside, from the place where kindness and love are born. And in that moment, he realized she had never looked so beautiful. And that's the end of the story. Should I take them now?
You should take them now.
Okay. All right, so now that that is done, I would like to take this opportunity to invite the youth of First Parish and the guides to follow me out to RE.
Nice job.
Hi there. My name is Marion French, and I'm a pastoral associate here in Sudbury at the First Parish Church. Almost every week at this time, we share our milestones of our lives with one another. We bring our concerns and our sorrows, as well as our joys and our gladness into this holy space. We speak of our own lives and the lives of those we hold dear. Through this sharing, we sustain each other and this congregation. At this time, I invite you to share your any milestones that you may have. Are there any milestones?
Hi, I'm Susan Stocker. I'm here with my husband, George Duval, and we have a wonderful milestone. Last weekend, our oldest daughter, Allison Chocolis, got married to Matthew Fishburne. The two of them met when they were both in the same dorm at MIT, and it's taken them 12 years to get this far. And as the best man said in his speech, geek love is patient. No, he said, love is patient. Geek love is exceptionally patient.
I'm Gail Hardenberg. Last spring, I decided that my church year, which begins now, I try to enact one of my favorite quotes, which is, do what you can, with what you have, where you are. And so I decided to try to be a lightning rod for fundraising this year. And during the announcements, I'll tell you an example of it. So if you have an idea for fundraising, think of me as someone to call to talk about it if you want inspiration. I'm not saying I'll do every idea that people send to me. I mean, it's an interactive thing. But this feels very spiritual to me. It feels very meaningful. The church means a lot to me. And this just seems like something I can do.
Hi, I'm Dave Andrews. I had an encounter this morning with a David Wilcox song. I call it an encounter because when I was hearing it, it made me stop what I was doing and listening. May have something to do with having seen Edge, my oldest son, play a lead role in the Hunchback musical, if you can believe there's a musical, at WPI last night, which was amazing. But I wanted to write down the whole song, but I didn't want to miss the service. So I'll share this, the refrain with you, which Wilcox obviously thought was worth repeating. See me afterwards if you want the whole song. In this scene set in shadows, like the night is here to stay, there is evil cast around us, but it's love that wrote the play. In this darkness, love will show the way.
Thanks. I'm Lulu Cash, and these two lovely people I have next to me have come in. I wasn't going to say why they came in, but everybody wished me happy birthday as I came in. So, as Peg says, my cover has been blown. I've gone from 39 to 40, you know. And this is Matt from Chicago, they live close to Chicago, and my granddaughter Annie Louise. And Matt said when we were talking about when he told me he was going to be coming in, because we had a dinner last night with the local sons of two other sons and their families. So the 12 of us were all there. And he said, we can do the church thing if you want. Matt loves this church. And actually has contributed to it as a gift in my husband and my name last year or the year before. So thanks, Matt, and thanks, Annie.
My name is Paul Rising. My wife, Scylla, had knee replacement surgery. This is post-op day 11. The operation went well, no surprises, as the surgeon said, and I just did my thing. She was in hospital for a couple of days, and I must confess it was a rough transition home, pain being the main thing. But she's doing well. We're working on the different things you use to ease the pain. That's going along fairly well. She's eating, sleeping, as long as the pain is not interfering. And I know several in the congregation have had this before, and some of them have talked with Scylla, so she knows, and she had known before what she was getting into. And I understand it's about 2 weeks before you say, oh, this is why I had the surgery. And maybe 2 months after you say, ah, it's finally there, or maybe it takes a year. I don't know. I haven't been through it. She will welcome cards and phone calls. Visiting is kind of iffy. Sometimes she's feeling she's having pain. Other times she's sleeping. So we'd rather at this point. We also have visiting nurses come in. And in order to have a visiting nurse come in, we learned, it means you're housebound. So I say that she's on house arrest. So she has to, I don't know what happens if you know, if you're caught being off grounds, other than maybe that, well, I think Medicare just wouldn't pay you the bill and we'd be paying it. So again, cards and phone calls are welcome.
Hi, Valerie. I'm relaying a message from my mother, Marian Tratnik, who is still at Emerson Hospital after 2 weeks, over 2 weeks now. So she wants me to say thank you for the cards and those that visited, that it helps her get through long days. We don't know, we're hoping she'll be home this week, but they're still trying to figure out questions about mobility and cognitive function, and we'll just have to see. Thank you.
For all that has been shared, both spoken and unspoken, may we hold these things in our hearts until we meet again.
Thank you.
This week has been an interesting one. The high point was that Rosh Hashanah helped us to celebrate the birthday of the universe. From there, we faced the continued onslaught of earthquakes, hurricanes, violence, saber rattling. I have to be honest, all of this unease and catastrophe has me wondering, are we facing something of biblical prophecy and retribution? I don't know if I'm the only one thinking that, but I kind of am like, what is going on in the world? I wondered, are we facing the end times? Is this it? Imagine my surprise when I was reading the Washington Post this week and saw a video that pointed out just that, with a specific date as the beginning of the end times. Of course, I had to watch. It's like a train wreck, you gotta look. Watching a video explained that the biblical rapture was to take place on September 23rd, 2017. The author of the prophecy got a lot of press this week. Today is the 24th, and we're still here, hopefully, because I wrote this sermon the other day, so I wasn't sure. Otherwise, I wrote this sermon for naught. And if not, then, well, clearly my theology was slightly off. Maybe we should offer a roll call to see if anyone was taken up in yesterday's rapture. As I contemplated the rapture, explained as a time when the faithful are taken up to meet Jesus as he arrives in a second coming, I chose to faithfully write this sermon in hopes that we would still be here. Our world has been in turmoil. We are facing the results of climate change as well as the possibility of nuclear attack. Maybe all of this is a sign pointing towards Revelations chapter 12, verse 1. I have never quoted Revelations in a sermon before. I tend to leave that part of the New Testament territory for my evangelical brothers and sisters. However, this morning I'm going to break with tradition. Revelations 12. A great portent appeared in the heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. She was pregnant and was crying out in birth pains, in the agony of giving birth. Then another portent appeared in the heaven, a great red dragon with 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 diadems on his head. His tail swept down a third of the stars of heaven and threw them to the earth. In Revelations, this is the beginning of the end. And in all honesty, I heard great booming last night around 9 p.m. and I thought for a nanosecond, could this be it? Or maybe thunder, or fireworks, or my crazy neighbor out playing with his World War II tanks. Yeah, I hear the boonies over there. I've spent some time this week watching videos about the astronomical events of this week. They're a bit unusual, it is true. The woman in Revelations is interpreted as the constellation of Virgo, and the crown of stars is thought to be the stars and planets in the constellation of Leo. The sun yesterday was over the shoulder of Virgo, and the moon was actually at her feet. And Jupiter, also known as the king, was in the realm of Virgo's belly and has been there for 9 months. And yesterday, Jupiter was metaphorically born from the body of Virgo. So it just gives me chills. I mean, clearly there is some sort of connection. But let me just explain this, that Virgo wasn't even a constellation recognized until much after Revelations was written. So, but prophecy is prophecy. So if the prophecy of Revelations is about astrology, then yesterday could have been the day. It is said that this specific alignment has not been ever seen since the beginning of time, which in the video was proclaimed to be about 6,000 years ago. Just shy of the 13.8 billion years based on scientific calculations. I found several modern-day prophecies on YouTube and at least one book that explained that the United States would have a meteor shower that would devastate the Western world on September 23rd, telling good Christians to get out. Yesterday, the author of the main Doomsday book recanted his prophecy just in time for the evening news, saying instead that this is a birth of a new age. personally like that message. I just want to say that. Several astronomers weighed in on the topic, of course, this week, and of the apocalyptic end time, some saying that it was, in fact, a rarity to have this astrological alignment. I personally love and trust the National Geographic Society and their publications, so I went to their website to see if they had any level-headed reporting going on. I was not disappointed. The title of the article was this: Why Is It Unlikely the World Will End on September 23rd? By Michael Gresko, who wrote, "No matter how you interpret the latest cosmic signs, history tells us people don't have the best track record at predicting the apocalypse. As viral videos and various tabloids tell us, September 23rd, 2017 will mark the end of an age. Depending on your taste, the date will either bring forth a collision between Earth and a rogue planet, Planet X, or a world-changing celestial alignment that heralds the end of days. The alignment in question will actually happen, but the significance of the astronomy is debatable. This year's alignment doesn't seem particularly unusual," says Colgate University Emeritus Professor Anthony Aveni, who specializes in the study of practices in the ancient world. But Aveni emphasizes that he's not interested in debunking apocalyptic claims. Instead, he wants to understand their cultural roots. For instance, U.S. religious and cultural traditions are steeped with millenarianism. I'm having a problem this morning, sorry. Which is the belief by religious, social, or political groups of, or movements in a coming of a major transformation of society, after which all things will be changed. Isn't that kind of every day? But anyways, focusing specifically on prophecies and apocalypses, I have to agree with Dr. Aveni. Where does the human need come from to think that the end is near? And why do people play on our fears to manipulate us towards all sorts of ends? I'm specifically pointing to politics on a global scale and corporate greed. What is the point of creating weapons that will destroy life on our planet or poison our food or water with fossil fuel, plastics, and chemical runoff? What is the point of all that? What are we doing? And if we're not doing it, then why are we allowing the current circumstances to unfold? Why are we allowing it? Whether we agree with it or not, do you remember the book, The Secret? Does anybody remember that book? Okay. The Secret is a best-selling 2006 self-help book by Rhonda Byrne, based on the earlier film of the same name. It's based on a pseudo-scientific law of attraction, which claims that thoughts can change the world directly. The book has sold 20 million copies worldwide and has been translated into 50 languages. The premise is simple. It explains that whatever one fixates on, good or bad, they will ultimately create or bring into their life. It's based on the law of cause and effect. It is believed that nothing happens by chance or outside the universal laws. Every action has a reaction or consequence. We reap what we sow. Ralph Waldo Emerson said the law of cause and effect is the law of laws. The most important lesson involving human conduct and interaction is seen in the cosmic law of cause and effect. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Every human thought, word, and deed is a cause that sets off a wave of energy throughout the universe, which in turn creates the effect, whether desirable or undesirable. This is why good thoughts, words, emotions, and deeds are essential for a better world. This is what it takes to create good effects. With every thought or intention, action, and emotion that is transmitted, a person sets into motion an unseen chain of effects, which vibrate from the mental plane through the entire cellular structure of the body, out into the environment, and finally into the cosmos. It is believed that eventually the vibratory energy returns to the original source upon the swing of the pendulum. The Hebrews, the Babylonians, the Greeks, the Europeans, and Emerson knew about the law of cause and effect, so it wasn't really much of a secret at all. So what are we doing in our lives to create the outcome that we hope for? What seeds are we sowing, which will bring us the outcome that we so desire? There are a lot of people in this world that focus on the end times, also known as eschatology. And there are a few of them who are sociopaths, with the political power to bring the worst to fruition. Whether they are leaders of countries or corporations, they base their principles on personal gain, the bottom line, on profit over people. There is no social conscience. Then there are many more of us who feel powerless or caught in a system of oppression. They go along because they cannot imagine a way out or around the system that we acquiesce to. But there are others, I count us in this group, who will stand up and do whatever it takes to make the world a better place. They have hope and faith in humankind, in love, in compassion for all. We must believe enough to create the outcome that we so want to see in our world. We have to work twice as hard and spread the message twice as far. We have power, although at times it feels far from true, to stop policies and hateful rhetoric. We do. We do have power. My life's mission is to convince and prove that this is true and to motivate us to make love in the world, to make compassion happen. We must believe and have faith, march for and lobby for love, compassion, and generosity. We must be tireless and relentless with our optimism. And I know some days it feels hard to do. We need to be a defibrillator of love for the hardened heart. And I know it's not easy to do day in and day out, but that is what I'm calling us to do. In order to do this, we need to find that place of beauty within. At times, we touch it and recognize this place truly. More than anything, we need to get right with ourselves, with other people, and with the people we do not even know yet. We need to atone, create a place of beauty within that shines out, bringing light to the darkest places in our world, adding a warm glow to the fear-stained anxiety that turns us away from the cultivation of care and compassion. Unitarian Universalist theologian Rebecca Parker teaches that your gifts, whatever you discover them to be, can be used to bless or curse the world. The mind's power, the strength of the hands, the reaches of the heart, the gift of speaking, listening, imagining, seeing, waiting, any of these can serve to feed the hungry, bind up wounds, welcome the stranger, praise what is sacred, do the work of justice, or offer love. Any of these can draw down the prison door, hoard bread, abandon the poor, obscure what is holy, comply with injustice, or withhold love. You must answer this question: what will you do with your gifts? Choose to bless the world. The choice to bless the world is more than an act of will, a moving forward into the world with the intention to do good. It is an act of recognition, a confession of surprise, a grateful acknowledgement that in the midst of a broken world, unspeakable beauty, grace, and mystery abide. There is an embrace of kindness that embraces all life, even yours. And while there is injustice, numbing, or evil, there moves a holy disturbance, a benevolent rage, a revolutionary love, protesting, urging, insisting that which is sacred will not be defiled. Those who bless the world live their life as a gesture of thanks for this beauty and this rage. The choice to bless the world can take you into solitude to search for the sources of power and grace, native wisdom, healing, and liberation. More, the choice will draw you into community, the endeavor share, the heritage passed on, the compassion of struggle, the importance of keeping faith, the life of ritual and praise, the comfort of human friendship, the company of earth, the chorus of life welcoming you. None of us alone can save the world. Together, that is another possibility waiting. Atonement, the practice of becoming at one with yourself and others and with this planet. We have a choice where we will spend our mental, emotional, and physical currency. We have a choice to focus on the end of days as a way out of the predicament that we have cultivated, or to put in the life-changing effort to make things right. Every thought, interaction, and decision we engender is our own. We seed what we expect, what we want, even if we are terrified of the outcome. If we are silent, we are complacent, and we can no longer afford to be silent, because silence equals death. Clearly, we survived September 23rd. Hallelujah. The rapture and the subsequent apocalypse, thanks to the great goddess. But today, there is still the threat of nuclear warheads. There are still people trapped in collapsed earthquake rubble, hurricane-damaged homes, standing floodwaters, folks killed or maimed in violent action, genocide, and the threat of war. We unfortunately cannot just wish it all away. We need to sow the seeds that might just bloom into optimism and reconciliation. We need to be the boots on the ground and the support that is needed. This Unitarian Universalist faith is not for the faint of heart, because our prayer is our service in times of need. I turn to the Grande Dame, Eleanor Roosevelt, who shared, "Once more, we are in a period of uncertainty, of danger, in which not only our own safety, but that of all mankind is threatened. Once more, we need the qualities that inspired the development of the democratic way of life. We need imagination and integrity, courage and a high heart. We need to fan the spark of conviction, which may again inspire the world as we did with our new idea of dignity and worth of free men. But first, we must learn to cast out fear. People who view with alarm never build anything." My dearest ones, as we head towards Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, let us become at one. Let go of the fear that grips us. Find that spark of courage that resides within us. Let us cultivate it and dare to change what we hold in our hearts as an act of revolution and reconciliation. I invite us to take a few minutes in silent reflection and meditation. For this we pray, so may it be. Amen. Let us rise in body and our spirit to sing hymn number 217 in the gray hymnal, "O Sing Hallelujah."
Thank you.
First Parish is financially sustained by our annual pledges, by fundraisers, thanks, Gail, rentals, donations of times and treasure, and with our weekly offering. It is true for all of us that we have expansive demands on our resources and our time, but we, the leadership of First Parish and its membership, ask and gratefully receive what you are willing to share this morning. Would the ushers please come forward to collect this morning's offering? We thank you for being present in a worshipful way with us this morning. As a way to stay connected with what is happening at First Parish, it is our practice to share announcements at the end of worship. Announcements are printed in the order of service. You can also find a calendar and more information about First Parish on our website. There's also a screen in our entryway that is filled with photos and quotes, and Fran puts a lot of time into it, and also a schedule for next week. So please take a look at that. And you might even be, your picture might even be on it. So, anyways, if you are a first-time visitor, we invite you to get to know us. And the only way to really do that is to consider spending some time with us. And if you have any questions about First Parish or Unitarian Universalism, please do not hesitate to speak with myself or any of the members. Directly after worship, we, the members, host a coffee hour downstairs in our parish hall. All are welcome to share some nibbles, hot and cold beverages, and conversation. Visitors are especially welcome to attend. Do you have an announcement, Gail? Excellent. So I would like to open up for announcements. Let's begin with Gail. You can more, absolutely.
Hello. As I said, I'm going to try to inspire fundraising this year. My favorite kind of fundraiser is what I call the no-brainer and the low labor. I'm a huge fan of that. When I sold historic Sudbury sweatshirts, t-shirts, and mugs for 25 years, you cannot believe how low labor that was. All I did was show up at the fairs. It was low labor. So what I'm offering today is I will help you if you don't know about this. You can, if you ever buy anything on Amazon, you can set it up so that it automatically gives money to First Parish from your purchase. And many of you don't feel, some of you don't feel confident in how to do that or using the computer or whatever. So I brought a bunch of cards, and at coffee hour today, you can get one that has my cell phone number on it. I'd be very happy to come to your house, help you set it up, or talk to you on the phone, whatever works for you. And First Parish will get the benefit. So thank you.
Thank you. Before we go to the next one, it is kind of a no-brainer. Jan, do you remember how much we made from Amazon purchases from members last year?
$600.
$600. I think 1 year I spent a lot and we made up like $1,000. So, but seriously, please do this. It's worthwhile. Mary Ellen, Mark.
Good morning, Mark Trone. Just as a friendly reminder, the 116th Harvest Fair is coming up in 3 short weeks. We have a number of volunteers, but we're still in need of quite a few more volunteers, specifically for setting up. Setup is on Friday night. However, if you're not available Friday night, there are some things we might be able to do Thursday night or Wednesday night. Just stop by the table. I've got the sign-up sheets downstairs during the coffee hour. We can kind of talk through that. All right, thank you.
Sheila.
There are a lot of coffee mugs downstairs with no names on them. And they'll last for a couple more weeks, and then I think they're going to disappear. So if you have a coffee mug that's your favorite one, but it doesn't have your name on it, or if your name is sort of wearing off, please remark it.
Peg. I'm sorry, I didn't see. Jella, who are you pointing to? Okay.
Peg Espinola. I was going to postpone this until closer to town meeting, but your sermon inspired me to get it out there. You and Sudbury have all received your warrant for the town meeting, which is on October 16th, Monday, and probably going into Tuesday. There is a warrant article at the end of the warrant about making Sudbury a welcoming community for all of us, including our undocumented immigrants. The information is in the warrant. If you want additional information or you have any questions, let me know. I can send you the fact sheet. This got vetted by our police chief, but he is now ambivalent about it publicly. So I do want people to be sure they know about it, and if they're for it, very much come to town meeting Monday and possibly into Tuesday. Thank you.
Marge. Maybe we should get a football for the microphone. Just curious.
I'm Marge Langmuir. I'm a member of the Landscape Committee, and I invite you to come to our meeting today after church at 11:30 in the library to learn about the Memorial Garden. We've had a subcommittee work on the paperwork, and we've changed a few things from what it was 20 years ago, and this is a good time to learn about it, and we welcome you to come. This meeting is in the library.
Della.
My name is Della Hughes, Harvest Fair Yard Signs. Anybody who hasn't signed up for one that would like, who's on a busy throughway in the area, please sign up downstairs, but I'm not talking about that at the moment. We're having a council meeting right after the coffee hour. It's at 11:45 in the Commons. For those folks who don't know, the council is a group of committee chairs and of other folks in leadership positions at First Parish, and what we do is we're going to be meeting 4 times this year to coordinate our plans, lay out plans, talk about where there might be ways we can coordinate and deal with conflicting schedules and things like that. So got a great bunch of leaders and looking forward to it.
We're meeting in the bracket room. Okay, here's my big announcement. What are you doing next Sunday evening, right around dusk? You're going to be with me, right? Because I'm going to be joining all of my clergy colleagues who are inviting their people to come and be on the common out here to do a candlelight vigil. For all the stuff that we're facing in the world. The one thing that we can do together is to gather and say, collectively, we want the world to be a better place. And so we're going to do that at 6:30 next Sunday, the day after Yom Kippur. And also, what's really important about that is it's the beginning of Domestic Violence Month, and it's a reminder that through frustration and anger and mental illness, people strike the ones they love more frequent than should possibly be true. And so First Parish is going to put a purple spot on our building for the month of October in recognition and reminder that violence is not the way, love is the way. So please join me next Sunday to be at that vigil, candlelight, and we will do that lighting. With that, let us extinguish the chalice. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. Good and loving people, our time in worship has come to an end. Go in peace, embraced by the light and warmth of our gathering. Go in love, ready again to struggle on. Go in beauty, shining forth like a lamp for freedom. So may it be. Blessed be. Amen.